Maybe you're doing some crazy party, or who knows?
Well, why? Come on, who doesn't want a life-size ostrich in their house? I would.
Welcome to Vintage Picking with Bad Madge. I'm Tanya McAneer of Bad Madge and Company, and we are celebrating our 13th anniversary in South Park, Bad Madge's, and this is our 13th episode, so it's kind of fun.
Really?
Yes, and I am so excited. We're welcoming our guest this month is Bradley McDonald of Girard Avenue Marketplace.
Hi.
Hi, Bradley.
How's it going?
Good, how are you?
I'm so excited. That's really cool, the 13th episode. On your 13 year.
Yeah, isn't that fun?
No, not at all, like, lucky. That's cool.
Lucky 13.
There you go.
And we ventured all the way up to La Jolla. Usually we record in my kitchen, but Bradley has to man the shop at 10 o'clock this morning, so we're here early, and we're recording this morning in La Jolla, and it's a beautiful day.
I know, it's gorgeous outside.
It's gorgeous. It's a nice change. We were just discussing the weather before we started our podcast, and I just want to do a little housekeeping before we get started interviewing Bradley. We don't have a lot of things to discuss about our housekeeping, just celebrating our 13th anniversary, and if you are in South Park or you come to visit Bad Madge, we will be closed on Easter. So I don't know if you're closed on Easter. Are you closed on Easter? Or do you normally close?
I don't know.
Oh, you just got to think about it.
Well, we always change our hours or kind of evolve. I don't know. Easter is kind of always a hit and miss because sometimes in the morning when
it
can be busy. And then you close in the afternoon when people are doing their family obligations and stuff.
For us, we're closed. All the other shops in South Park are closed. So we will be closed. So if you want to come, you can just look through the windows and pine for something, you know, inside the shop and just come back the next day. So we're going to get started with Bradley McDonald. And he is the new owner of Girard Avenue Marketplace. But before we get started, I'm about to surprise you.
Oh, God.
So we do a little game. We call it Fun Facts for Vintage Fanatics. So I did a little bit of research about you. I asked a couple of your friends, Brian Musial of Oates General. He gave me a little insight. I said, what do you know about Bradley? Please tell me a little bit. So he said, well, you know, Bradley likes watches. And he found a watch. I guess you found a Rolex. Was it for a dollar or something like that?
He told me.
So I guess you have some background with selling a watch or a little bit about Rolex. And I wanted to ask you, do you know what the most expensive vintage Rolex was ever sold? Do you know what it was? Putting you on the spot. Yes, to think.
No.
No? Would you like to know?
Yeah.
So, based on my Google searches, it was the Paul Newman's Rolex Daytona. It sold for $17.8 million in October of 2017. It is actually the most expensive watch ever sold in the world.
Really?
So now you know.
Oh, that's so cool. No, I've seen on, like, roadshow stuff or whatever where it's like there's these super antique or rare things that they find through their...
So do you want to tell us the story about the Rolex?
Oh, that one.
that you found?
Yeah. So a handful of years ago, my aunt is on the board of or a member of the Thursday Club.
Okay.
And the annual Thursday Club rummage sale that they have every year at Bulbell Park.
Okay.
This was probably about, I want to say 10 years ago. So I was going through on that Thursday event evening where... Okay. It's just for family and friends and stuff like that. Going through the watches and kind of it's the end of the night after we've kind of gone through the vintage clothes and the furniture and stuff. Anyway, I was in the jewelry area going through these little tubs of assortments of whatevers. And I picked up a watch and the band felt funny. Like it felt real.
Okay.
But it was a watch I didn't have heard of.
Okay.
But underneath it, it's had the Rolex embossment on the band.
Okay.
And then it had to be an old Tudor watch.
Okay.
And so I just grabbed it. It was a dollar. But then on that event, it said $1.50 for extra charity. So it was $1.50.
Oh my goodness.
I know. Extra 50 cents. You got to get it. And so I just bought it. And then...
Not knowing.
But because I just got my grandfather's watch after he had passed, and it had the same feeling of like a light aluminum band.
Okay.
And so took it down to our watch cleaner down the street, Garnett, and took him like, is this real? He's like, he opened it up. He's like, yeah, it's a real Rolex.
Wow.
And But it's a Tudor watch, which is a military brand for Rolex.
Oh, okay.
So, but now my dad wears it. He's like, I
so
want
you
that.
So you gave it to your dad?
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice. So you didn't actually end up selling it.
No. Okay. No, dad wears it.
But wow, what a find.
Right?
I mean, and you never know what you're going to find.
Mm-hmm. And then the story got out. So my mom told my aunt of what happened. And then I'm sure she sold another member. And then ever
so
since
then. So the story
then,
has kind of followed you.
That. And then they started bringing in like evaluators
to go through because they didn't want to end up selling more valuable
things. Well, yeah. It was probably an accident. But they get so many donations and stuff. And they just kind of like threw it out or whatever. Yeah. Then I just happened to come across it.
You never know what you're going to find out in the wild.
Exactly.
It doesn't happen that often. But it
does
once in a while.
But it does.
Okay. I do have another question. Mm-hmm. I normally don't do two.
Okay.
I understand you like taxidermy.
Oh, I do.
You do?
I do.
So I did a little research, and I'm wondering if you know where the oldest taxidermy shop is and how old it might be, where it is in the world, and what it's called.
I'm sure it's probably in Europe.
It is in Europe.
Okay.
Yes.
England?
Nope. It's actually in France.
Is it?
And it's called Desrolles.
Okay.
And it was founded in 1831, based on what I found on Google. So that's what I found on Google. It's called Desrolles. And interesting enough, Brian had told me that you like taxidermy. Uh-huh. And I was listening to one of my favorite podcasts, which is Freakonomics. Oh, uh-huh. No. This American Life. It was This American Life. And they were interviewing this comedian. And he lives in Paris. I can't think of the comedian's name. And he was talking about going to this place. And I was like, oh, how the connection of Brian telling me you like taxidermy, and he brought it up. So I ran inside and Googled it, and it's an amazing shop.
Really?
It's in Paris. They were founded in 1831, and then I guess they moved locations in 1851. Uh-huh. So they've been in that same location since 1851. I guess they had a big fire in 2003, I think it was.
Oh, no.
And a lot of the merchandise and everything in it was really, you know, destroyed and damaged. Yeah. But they rebuilt it, and a lot of people helped, you know, donate mm-hmm. items. And, you know, you can get an ostrich or a polar bear. I mean, looking at the pictures are incredible online. So it's Desrolles in 1831. So the next time you go to Paris, you have to go there.
I have to. That's just like that way. No, like the... I can't believe Brian threw me on the bus like that. No, like I'm not a hunter in general, but yeah, I find the appreciation of old taxidermy.
I agree.
Like, you see some really beautiful pieces.
Yes.
Like,
do you have any in your house? Do you collect?
I do. I got through another estate that locally a handful of stuff. It all came out of Colorado, but then he was a hunter. But then he had this on Alaska trip. And it's called a doll, D-A-L-L.
Okay.
And it's a white, like, bighorn sheep.
Mm.
It's gorgeous. It's like
it's
just almost like an albino sheep, and has these big, massive, like, round, curved horns. And it's just, it's really beautiful. Like, what else do I have in the house? Not a lot, but, like, I also have another mountain goat that came from Montana.
Okay.
The big... that they're known for in Glacier Park and stuff like that. And so, but that's about it. But
yeah, I guess this Desrolles you can buy, but most of their business is rental.
Uh-huh.
So a lot of artists will rent if they want to have an animal that they're you know, drawing or painting or something, and they need an actual figure to paint from. They can use, or maybe you're doing some crazy party, or who knows?
Well,
why
come
you
on,
would...
who doesn't want a life-size ostrich in their house?
I would. I mean, every single animal you can imagine are in this place. I looked on their website. I was just blown away how beautiful this place is. Speaking of beautiful places, your place is beautiful.
Oh, thank you so much.
So it's spectacular. So walk us through.
Thank you.
So your background, you grew up here in San Diego, I understand.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you...
Born and raised here in San Diego. I grew up here, mostly locally here in La Jolla. Grew up in South Mission. And
okay.
Moved up to Soledad in my early years. And then kind of went through the local school system out here through Bird Rock and Muirlands, La Jolla High. And that's actually where I met Brian's mom. She taught me back then.
Okay.
In middle school. And then went to Montana for college and then came back down here and started a career actually in cosmetics for a handful of years with Urban Decay. And
what were you doing?
I was an executive for them.
Okay.
I was a traveling exec overseeing Southern California stores.
Okay.
Wow,
you did a complete
Ulta division.
Career shift, didn't you?
Uh-huh.
When did that happen?
I was with them from 2008 to 2016.
Okay.
And then I left them and then kind of took a year break. And then...
How did you get the vintage and antique bug?
It kind of came from my original boss that hired me on with Urban. We started doing a small booth down at Newport Avenue Antique Center before it closed.
Oh, I see.
And okay. Then it kind of grew on from there. So we started in a small 10 by 10.
So you had a booth in one of the antique malls mm-hmm. in Ocean Beach,
uh-huh.
which is no longer there, unfortunately,
no,
right?
No.
So, and what were you drawn to? What kind of pieces were you drawn to? Did you have a particular era, a particular aesthetic?
I had no really aesthetic. Like, I tried to bring stuff down from Montana, so I had some really cool vintage Pendletons. Like,
oh, okay.
The flannels you get up in Montana are just insane.
Okay.
It's just like the original pearl snaps, all that fun stuff. So I bring down a gob of vintage Pendletons and Western shirts. And then started picking up just like small, it's like barware or like oddities. And then that was like during that rattan revolution where okay. all the peacock chairs came back and all yeah. the boho, uh-huh. like pre-boho. And then all that blew up. So I started kind of watching what other people were doing.
And maybe what's selling kinda, to see what's selling.
Yeah, yeah, emulating. And then, yeah. And then, so then my boss, she took one side of the booth. I had the other half of the booth. So it was a 10 by 20 booth. So I had my own 10 by 10 for the first part of it. And then as Newport started to retire, then the original owners had kind of expanded our booths. And so as people were moving out, then it's like, we have more stuff, keep bringing more stuff in. So
you kept expanding.
Everybody's booths kept expanding. And then you kind of got a big booth going. And then when that retired, Lori from Vignettes had recruited me over to her store.
Okay, and she's also on Newport, right?
In mm-hmm. Ocean Beach. Right next door.
And they're still there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's 28 years now.
Wow, okay.
Almost getting to 30 years.
They're kind of a you know, established, you
yeah,
know,
small institution.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then I went over to Kurt Street.
And Kurt Street is behind the sports arena. So uh-huh. If our listeners wonder where some of these locations are, they're one of the largest antique malls in San Diego, Kurt Street. I think they have 40.
I think it's like
the largest. Yeah. I think they're 40,000 square feet or something like that. It's massive.
It's a SWAT team of vendors, but yeah. it's incredible. It's a giant collaboration of what, over 200 vendors
yeah,
or something
it's a
like
lot.
That.
Yeah.
It's a massive install.
You could easily spend several days in there.
Oh, in one room.
Yeah, don't go there and think you're going to only spend like 15 or 20 minutes. You are going to,
grab a coffee or a Diet Coke, just kind of roam through and go there for hours.
So you had a booth there.
Mm-hmm. And then.
So what were you selling there? What kind of things were you finding that you were like turning?
That was just kind of the fun booth, where I would say. So Vignettes was more of my Montana stuff, and then also kind of like the beach chic and shabby chic and kind of like that whole...
You're fitting that customer base.
Customer base down there, because that's kind of what they're... They have eclectic environment stuff down there, but yet a theme of light and airy and kind of chippy and...
Got it. And this wasn't
French
a side hustle for you. This was a full-time job.
No, it was a full
job.
Gig. Yeah,
full
yeah.
Full gig. And so you were going there regularly... Mm-hmm. Keeping your booth flushed and that kind of thing and constantly outpicking.
So the cool thing about how I found out doing that business model is that if I could source 7 days a week really and then just keep it fresh mm-hmm. and then just constantly drop off some merchandise, and then when I wanted to go to Montana and pick, I could go up there for a month and then come back down mm-hmm. and then reload again, but then the shop mans my booth while I'm away, so it's really kind of cool because you have to pay the store babysit your booth and keeps everything moving and the operations moving, and then I can leave for a minute, pick, and then come back and still be able to travel and do both worlds.
And be sourcing and doing that mm-hmm. kind of thing. I think that's one of the challenges as business owners, and now we'll move into you owning this shop, mm-hmm. is you have to think about your time a little bit differently because you have to be physically in the store and manning it or managing it, and there's a lot of different moving parts to keep a business running.
Oh, so true. So that's the
that's
new
shift. So you left Vignettes at some point.
Yeah, so...
Do you remember when that was? Or
I left Vignettes... I think during COVID,
okay,
during 2020.
Yeah, because that was a tough time for all of us.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, a lot of the shops we had to physically close. I don't know, did they physically close?
They closed, but I think they opened by private appointment. Mm. And then they were doing like 12 to 5 when things were kind of lighting up and stuff like that. During 2020, so when I started kind of doing this, it was like 2017, 2018. And then by COVID started, I had vignettes going. I had Kurt Street Vintage Marketplace going. I also had Classic in Little Italy.
Oh, wow.
With Sergio and Andre going with buddy Darren in a booth down there. And I had Gerard going.
So
I had four locations
going. You had four locations, and Classics was probably more mid-century.
Mid-century, contemporary, Danish design, mid-century pieces.
So you'd be out picking, say, at an estate or a private pick, and you'd see things, and you go, okay, this could be for this particular booth. This could be for... So you had different places that you could take particular items.
Yeah.
That's kind of fun. Yeah.
It was super fun. And that's, I think that's where I found the bigger balance of everything by doing multiple stores, is that whatever you love, you can figure out what store goes best with that.
Right.
So you can shop for everything.
Yeah.
And you can like do all your fun high-end stuff or contemporary pieces at Classic in Little Italy with Sergio and Andre. And then you can do your boho stuff down in Vignettes. Mm-hmm. And you can do your quirky stuff down at Kurt Street. Mm-hmm. And then project pieces that you just like, oh, I don't really want to do that right now. But then like, but really beautiful furniture.
Right.
And then my La Jolla one was just, I did a lot of patio furniture. I'm in.
Here at Girard?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, patio furniture.
Patio furniture and powder coating. If I can powder coat it, I will bring it in here.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, because powder coating, it's funny because I have a couple pieces that I have in my yard, basically, that I keep looking at and go, okay, do I want to spend the money on powder coating? And it depends on what kind of margin you have, too. And here you might have a little bit more of a margin because you have a customer that's willing to pay a little more for a good piece.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you left Vignettes at some point, 2020.
2020.
And you stayed at Kurt Street for quite a while, right?
I stayed with Kurt Street for quite some time. I ended up, Darren, who had split my booth with me, had consolidated down just to Classic in Little Italy.
Okay.
And then he was also doing, we recruited him over here at Girard. But then Brian, I had met him, I think, just before that.
Okay.
And we partnered together.
Okay.
And so then Brian and I shared that booth for... Till recently.
Yeah, so Brian Musial of Oats General.
Mm-hmm.
And so you guys partnered for 4 years, 5 years?
About that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then he opened his store just this past year.
Uh-huh.
And then you took over this space here in La Jolla. When did that happen?
Just right before him. So I took over June of 2023.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's coming up on a year.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Yeah. Time flies.
So tell us about your space here and what sort of your business model.
So I took over. So the previous owners took over. So it used to be called, let's go back to the beginning. So this used to be called Girard Avenue Collections Girard Collections with Shannon Turner, and she had this for about 25 years as a home decor store, very similar to what I'm doing, but as a different business model of probably have majority of the store and maybe have a handful of vendors.
Okay.
So she had, let's say, 50% of the store, then the other 50 was rented out by some vendors.
Okay.
And then she retired it back in 2017.
Okay.
It was reopened in 2018 with the Hurleys, and then they recruited me on that first summer in August. So I've been in the store since they reopened it.
In
2018.
Okay.
In that August. Been building the business with them, watching it evolve.
Mm-hmm.
The vendors kind of come and go, but yet solidifying the core vendor group in here.
Okay.
And then it maintained probably at 12 vendors.
Okay.
Maybe 10 back in there.
10 to 12
vendors. 10 to 12 vendors.
Okay.
And then when I took over in June, I have...
Of 2023.
I've moved some vendors around to kind of get them in the flow of the spot. So we're a multi-vendor store. So everybody has a little booth, and then they're in charge of their areas and curating their own inventory, maintaining their own spaces. And then during that time, I've done some construction. I've kind of to re-up the store and kind of reinvigorate it. And then I've also since then curated some more vendors, so now I have a team of 20.
Okay, so you have 20 vendors.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
and what do you look for in a vendor? Like, what kind of things do you look for them to bring in?
Really, anything. It's like I give everybody pretty much the lay of the land to run their own business.
Okay.
We don't do too much in collectibles or figurines, records, and stuff like that.
Okay. It's a little more high end.
Well, it's high end, but I think it's like we do more home decor.
Okay.
Like it's strictly like I think decor shop. Okay. So, like oddities, furniture, collectibles.
Lighting, a lot of great lighting. I mean, if you look around in this shop, it is incredible. It is a feast for your eyes. And walking in here, there's a lot of beautiful, the lighting really catches me. I'm looking at these amazing orange lamps on top of these lacquer side tables, and those lamps are incredible. They're kind of sculptural and just really eye-catching, and that I think that's one of the things that brings people in.
Yeah, a lot of one of a kinds, a lot of stuff. So one of our vendors is Celia, who used to own Et Cetera's Next Doors for years. So okay. She's been,
so describe her booth for you, for us.
She is I would say the European and traditional, but eclectic though, because it's right now it's definitely more traditional European, but
because she's got crystal candlesticks.
Yeah, she has brought in a bunch of water
and furs, there's some sort of Asian figurines, mm-hmm. and silver sort of, I guess. Yeah, really quite a beautiful silver. Would you say it's like an ice bucket, and there's beautiful Asian plates.
Yeah, she gets a lot of silver plate, a lot of crystal.
Very heavy sideboard, this big carved sideboard. Mm-hmm. It's gorgeous. It's gorgeous.
Yeah, it's always evolving. So her booth always evolves, but she used to import a bunch of containers in from Europe. Mm. So she has a wealth of collections. There's really fun, wow. curated stuff. But it'll start evolving into more coastal come summer.
Okay. So she's always...
she gets a lot of corals, okay. and a lot of beautiful shell pieces, but okay. then beachy linens and French linens, a lot of fun barware baskets. And it's like... there's always something in there that will catch your eye, even though she has like beautiful, even old Spanish iconography and little santos, and there's like an old Madonna in there somewhere and stuff like that. So it's around the world stuff, but yet it's a booth that captures, because there's a lot of smalls and intricacies of
you have
the artwork
to spend
and
some
stuff.
Time looking. Yeah, that's really good.
It makes you like stay in there and look for stuff.
Yeah, which is what you want.
Yeah.
So are you guys open every day?
7 days a week.
7 days a week. Mm-hmm. And how often are you here?
7 days a week.
Right now you're doing the 7 days a week thing.
I am doing the 7 days a week. But
so how are you finding time to pick?
I don't.
So what does that look like for you?
I'm getting projects done.
Yeah.
So I haven't been picking. Hopefully this summer I can do it again. But last summer, Brian with Oats General,
you guys went on a trip,
on that trip to Tennessee.
Okay.
Which is so much fun.
Yeah, so that was actually one of the things I wanted to chat about. It's like you're sourcing when you're in Tennessee, and that feeling of getting up in the morning. Do you mm-hmm. get that same feeling where you're like kind of nervous and a little bit excited and you can't wait to see what you're going to find? And it's like this, like a picker is... it's hard to tell people how that feels.
Oh, it's a rush for sure. But Tennessee, well, I've never been to the South before, but like I've never been to Tennessee before, so I was just going into it blind.
Okay,
it was funny. I was talking to my mom, and she was up in Montana, and she's like, "Where are you?" I'm like, "I don't know." She's like, "Well, where are you?" I'm like, "You're gonna have to GPS me because I really don't know where I am."
You were somewhere in Tennessee.
In Tennessee, outside of Nashville. I think we're in some type of a ville of some sort. There's a million out there. Everything ends with ville. So I know that. Remember, there's Shelbyville. That's where we stayed one night. But then you get onto this highway, and it's like a 1,000-mile yard sale of some sort.
It's a 1,000-mile yard sale.
Yeah, and it was so much fun. We only did a blip of it, but it goes through literally middle America. It goes from...
I've always wanted to do it.
The ocean to the Canadian
borders. Are you guys going again this year?
I'm hoping.
Can I come?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, how fun. And tell us some of the things that you found.
Oh, what did we find? There was a lot of good taxidermy out there. He's like, "Brad, we can't bring that back." I'm like, "But can't we?"
So how did you bring it back? Did you guys drive back or you flew?
We flew out. So Brian had went out there. We have another friend, Kim.
Yeah, Kimchi.
So she and her husband moved out there. Then her parents moved out there too. So they have a beautiful little farm out there. And then... she has multiple stores that she does her vintage stuff out of there too.
Yeah, I follow her on Instagram.
I have friends with her and her husband, but then Brian's flew out there prior to do this sale with her, and then he had called me. I had just bought the store, and I've only been doing it for a couple months, so I was glued here.
Yeah.
And then he had called me. He's like, "You have to see this." I'm like,
yeah.
I don't know, whatever. But then I had some other friends. It's like, well, we can maintain the store and you go out there. And I was just about to have my 40th as well. And
Your 40th birthday present for yourself.
Basically.
Cool.
So like last minute ticket, which was a fortune, to fly to Tennessee. So flew out there and then he picked me up from the airport and then we drove out to the wherever north of Nashville, okay. I believe. And then got on the highway the next morning and then just it was a wonderland of oddities.
Do you look online for the map or like how do you find things?
You just get on the highway and like no matter where you are signs, and there's signs kind of guiding you to it and then once you're on it you just go as far as you want.
Oh wow.
So I think we maybe did like 50 miles in it.
Wow.
So we didn't get very far into it, but there's so much. That's the thing. It's like there's a church sale that has like maybe a parking lot of 10 people in it that community wise, and then you have the mom and pop neighbors that have two garage sales next to each other, and then you go to like the field that has like 100 people in it.
Oh wow.
And it's just you just kind of keep
it sounds amazing
going. So it was good to have a wingman though, because Brian was the driver, I was the wingman, so he slowed down. I'm like, go or stop? And so I'm like, until I see something, I'm like, pull over.
Yeah, because it's, and I do that even here, you know, garage sale, you kind of slow you do the slow drive by and you're looking to see is it something.
Like dive bomb into a spot.
Yeah, exactly. So did you find anything like you were really, really excited about?
In actual Tennessee, not so much. There was like some really cool kind of primitive stuff. I think that was really was big last year. Okay. And it still is pretty big now, is like the rustic and primitive benches, stools. What else did I find out there? Not too much along the highway.
Okay.
Not off the top of my head. But we did, so the next morning before we left town, we went to Kim's house, but Kim has a spot. If you're ever in Columbia, Tennessee, it's Columbia Antique Marketplace.
What is it?
Columbia Antique Marketplace. Okay. They call it Camp.
Okay.
And it's like this store times 10.
Oh, wow.
It's incredible.
And
so,
the prices were good enough for you to flip?
Yeah. So I went for broke in there.
Oh, wow.
So
okay.
I found a handful of beautiful landscape artworks, original oils, like a really cool antique cloche, like a big guy, which are super hard to find these days. Some benches and primitive stools and stuff like that.
And you did you guys fill up like a U-Haul or what did you do?
A big cargo van.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then you just drove it back.
Then we just drove it back. So we went from Tennessee to Arkansas, Arkansas to Oklahoma, Oklahoma to Texas, Texas to
And did you
Arizona.
Pick on the way home?
Uh-huh.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so we got
you were like
gas.
American Pickers.
We were living the life. I get on my iPhone and we're getting ready to stop or we need to eat or we need to get gas. And it's like, okay, what's near us? And then you just kind of Google antique or thrift near you. And then it's like, oh, yeah, there's 10 shops ahead of us.
Isn't
Perfect.
It amazing what we can do now on our phones?
Right.
Like, I mean, it's a game changer for us.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I use Google Lens all the time to identify things and to figure out, you know, pricing and that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. It's incredible I just upgraded my phone. So I went from iPhone 7 to iPhone 15.
Okay, that was
so
a big
now
jump.
I feel like I can rule the world.
You can.
But, that was always funny because I couldn't do Google Lens because I wasn't. Oh, what do they call it? I wasn't applicable. No, you're not up to date on your phone, so you're not able to use this.
They force you to
app.
Get the next,
Like you're out of network. Like, cool. Yeah. Thanks, Apple.
Yeah, you had to have enough of that updated technology.
But lots of fun stuff along the road, though. But like Amarillo, Texas was a great honey hole to find bunch of stuff. And then Santa Fe, New Mexico was another fun one. I've never been there before.
I've been to Santa Fe.
There was another antique store there that was incredible.
And were you, because I find a lot of times antique malls, I can't buy something and flip it. But you were able to find things within a price point that you can flip?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Like it was mostly just furniture pieces. Nothing too much of the smalls. I did buy a bison for my birthday.
Full bison?
A bison mount,
a
head.
Okay, ahead.
Not a full bison.
But how cool.
Yeah. That was in Santa Fe. I bought one for my 40th. It was a petite size baby buffalo, but it was cute.
It's still amazing.
It's beautiful. It's in my bedroom.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But there were some beautiful 18th century mesquite and beautiful church pews.
Okay.
Out of Mexico that they had got there. So I got two benches.
And then you brought those here.
Brought those here.
See, that wouldn't be a good match for my business, but mm-hmm. it's perfect. If you look around in the space, I could totally see it in here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool. I actually really like to, source out in the wild, but I love to actually source out of stores. Like,
okay.
Because when you go to different antique stores, it's already curated for you. And if you can kind of, and dealers work with other dealers.
Yeah, they
like,
do.
You just have a really, just, it's like, hey, I'm from California. Or you just kind of just talk about things.
Yeah.
And like, and they point you out in the store. If you're looking through a store, like very meticulously and they're like,
they
so where are you from?
Yeah, they know.
And
I think we're kind of a kindred spirit.
Yeah.
Too,
and it's like, oh, I'm traveling around. I'm picking for my shop or whatever. And then like you ask them, is there wiggle room on stuff and whatever? Uh-huh. And if you're just kind of kind and you just ask politely and stuff like that, usually dealer, they work with you.
For sure.
And then gives it, it's like, oh, hey, you're under travels. Like I'll give you percentage, whatever. And then you return the favor along the road.
Yeah, so, exactly. I think it's a lot
it's
about
a good network.
Yeah, networking and being kind to people. And also, like, when I have a dealer come into my shop and maybe they're going to buy for, let's say, Palm Springs, mm-hmm. you know, for me, it's like, okay, I bought this item.
Mm-hmm.
The person that I bought it from made some money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe they had an aunt that died and they have all the stuff and they don't want to deal with it. They're letting it go. They want to get rid of it. They're happy because now it's not going into a landfill.
Yeah.
And I'm happy because now I have great merchandise for my store.
Mm-hmm.
Another person comes in, maybe it's another dealer, they buy it. I'm making money. The person I bought it from made money. Now
mm-hmm.
they're going to sell it and they're going to make money. So mm-hmm. it's like this monetary, like there's this economic exchange that happens with our business.
Right.
And I think other dealers really get that.
Yeah.
You know, they realize that we're all in this together.
Oh, for sure. But like, but then also it's like when you have it priced at one point and they come in at like a 40%, I'm like, come on.
Yeah.
Like, if you're going to come off like that, we're not going to get off
to
a good start.
Yeah. Let's be reasonable.
I understand you want to flip it more than me, but yet, let's be reasonable about where
it also your depends on your market,
be.
Too.
True.
Like, who your market is. And so, your market here at Girard, who is your customer, your main customer?
It's really everybody. It's like, I get asked that question all the time, and our clientele is so vast. We're a very big traveling community. We're in the middle of La Jolla on Girard. And
what do you mean by traveling community?
It's basically like a lot of travelers. So it's we have La Valencia, the famous pink
so
hotel down the street,
visiting.
We have a lot of Airbnb tourists. A lot of people visit La Jolla Shores.
Uh-huh.
A lot of multi-property owners that, like, Texas. I'm
I was just going to say, Brian told me
everybody's
a lot of
from
people
Texas.
From Texas. Yeah.
Yes. They live in Dallas or any part of Texas, and then they have a condo here or a home here, and then they're here for a month or so, and they shop our store and then constantly ship stuff back.
Or
people here in business.
Here.
The UCSD is not too far away, so we have a lot of parents that visit their kids.
I see.
The other Estancia Hotel is not too far up the road.
Okay.
So there's a lot of stuff and activities near us, but also we have La Jolla Shores and La Jolla Cove that people
that live right here,
and stuff. And then we also have a built-in community with, because with the previous owners, and then this being an antique store for like 30 years, it's kind of been a small institution for decor.
Which is great.
Other than the Arc down the street, the consignment store, it's really just us two left in the village for antique and home decor.
Okay.
Unless
so
it's
people
some big
know
box
you're
stuff.
Here and they've maybe been past customers and they come back again.
Like their mom shopped with us, their grandma shopped with us, their now daughter shops with us. So it's kind of a smorgasbord of different people. And and the cool thing about how I built the store of adding 20 vendors now is that it's so eclectic in here with all the vibes. Like we have antique, we have vintage, we have mid-century, we have a couple custom-made pieces, we have some new pieces. So it's a little bit of everything. So we're very a well-rounded model that everybody, if it's you're coming in for a lamp, somebody else can come in for a side table in the same group and stuff for everybody.
Yeah. And do you use social media?
I'm getting better with Instagram.
Okay.
It's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work.
It's doing a correct post, making that right picture. It's not like snap a picture and write
really,
a blurb.
It's hard,
It takes like 20 minutes per post. It's really methodically thinking about
you really do
what you're writing and what you're presenting about your store.
Yeah.
It kind of doubles down with Facebook because they link to each other. Yeah. So I don't Facebook too much, but whatever it posts on Instagram goes directly to Facebook.
That's what I do too, yeah.
And then I bought GerardAvenueMarketplace.com as more of a splash page.
Okay.
And then our email's on that for easy communication. But mostly Instagram's our main gig for virtually seeing what we're doing in the store and stuff. So,
And I think you've really put your heart into this business based on what Brian has been telling me, and I've been following you and seeing the kind of development as you've taken over. And so where do you see it going?
Up. It's growing in the right direction, which is great. So getting all the booths, we finished up some construction in the back to open up the bigger galleries to get better walkability, more visual. But the cool thing about the store is that everybody in the store has either been, one, had their own store, two, has been doing interior design for quite some time. So aesthetically, they've built these mini booths almost like a mini store.
That's
so we're
great.
Strong in merchandising skills. So it's open, it's fresh, it's not cluttered, but it's a lot of eye candy around the store. But I think since taking over and where we're going is that it's just going to get better and better.
Good for you. It's been
really fun. And we had a small blurb in the La Jolla Light about a month ago or so saying that it's under new ownership. That was a great shout out for the store and really sweet. The community and the rallying of people coming back to
the
store.
Great.
It's like,
they're excited.
I can't wait to see what's going on. And every time it looks so different in here, and it's just the constant affirmations of you're doing a good job.
Good for you.
It just really makes it like you're doing something right, and
good
like
for you.
And just keep it going straight.
Yay.
So
good for you.
It's really exciting. I'm really stoked.
Good for you.
Thank you.
So my producer Brian's given us the 5-minute warning.
I was trying to give us a high five.
However, before we wrap it up, what? I need to know about Lake McDonald. I heard your family has a lake named after them in Montana.
I don't know how to explain this. It's a complete randomness of how this all came apart. So my dad is originally born and raised in Montana, McDonald. And then my mom is a Towson, but her dad lived in Kensington. And then they grew up here in North Park and then South Park on Utah and then on Texas, I think. But then they end up living off of Palisades in Kensington. Anyways, my grandpa, my mom's dad, homesteaded in the park in Glacier National Park back in the 40s or the 30s.
Okay.
So right after it became national, not too long, but there was a part of it called Kelly's Camp. And so it's across the way from Lake McDonald Lodge in the park. So it was homesteaded in by my mom's dad.
Okay,
so
that your grandfather.
The lake house is on my mom's side.
Okay.
And then my parents met in Montana in the West Glacier at a golf course.
Okay.
And ever since been together. So when they got married, my dad's name comes through Duncan McDonald, who actually discovered Lake McDonald in Glacier Park.
Okay.
So it's my great-great-great-great uncle. I don't know how many greats are in there, but there's a lot. But there's lineage of Duncan McDonald through my dad's side of Lake McDonald married my mom, Hattowson, but yet her dad had the property on the lake.
Oh, how wild.
And so so we have property via my mom, but then the name via my dad, and then...
Okay, so you have a Lake McDonald in Montana.
Mm-hmm.
How exciting.
It is.
Okay, so...
It doesn't give me any extra treatment. I'm not a celebrity.
It's no, not like, celebrity. Oh, yes, you are.
The McDonald's are here. I'm like, they couldn't give two about us. They actually want us out of the park because they wanted to keep it national, but it's all homesteaded and protected, so...
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's been a treasure, and the lineage of Montana, it's just second home. And
yeah, that's awesome.
It's beautiful up there. Have you ever been?
No, I have not.
You gotta get up there. The shopping up there is super fun.
I heard it's amazing.
Come visit.
Yes. Okay, so to come visit, that's a good segue, to wrap up our interview with you. So if somebody wants to come and visit, it's Gerard Avenue Marketplace. Mm-hmm. What's the address here?
7505 Gerard Avenue.
And it's right in the heart of La Jolla.
Uh-huh.
And
at the cross street of Pearl and... and Girard. So on the north end next to Harry's.
Okay. And you do have a website, mm-hmm. GirardAvenueMarketplace.com. And also on Instagram is a Girard Avenue Marketplace.
All spelled out. So it's okay, so elongated.
Start following Bradley, and that way you can kind of give him some support. And please come in and see him. I'm sure he would love to see you. And if you, of course, mention the podcast, I'm sure he'll be happy to hear that you listened to his interview. And again, I'm Tanya McAneer of Bad Madge, and this is our Vintage Picking with Bad Madge. Thank you, Bradley,
thank
for
you
being
so much.
Our
so
guest
much fun.
This month. And don't forget, if you follow us, we would love for you to subscribe and like our podcast. If you have a question, you can always send a question or comment to badmadgepodcast@gmail.com. And this was our 13th episode.
Lucky 13.
Next month will be aired on Thursday, April 18th, and hopefully we'll see you in the shop. Again, I want to remind you, if you come into Bad Madge and you mention that you listen to our podcast, we will give you 20% off in our store at Bad Madge. And we've actually had several people do that. So we always love when someone says, I listen to Bad Madge. I listen to Vintage Picking. So thank you, Bradley. I hope you have a fabulous day.
You
and
too.
Again, I'm Tanya McAneer. You guys have a great day. Thanks for listening.